Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. British actor Michael Cumsty is currently portraying Desmond Curry in the Roundabout Theatre Company production of Terence Rattigan's The Winslow Boy, which the New York Times called a stirring, moving, and resonant drama that touches a deep chord. The play is running at the American Airlines Theatre on 42nd Street in New York City through December 1st. Cumsty will also perform in Roundabout's next production at the American Airlines, Sophie Treadwell's Ma Chenal, which begins previews on December 20th. Michael Cumsty's more than 16 Broadway credits include La Bette, Timon of Athens, Enchanted April, and the musical revivals of 1776, 42nd Street, and Sunday in the Park with George. His film credits include, but are not limited to, The Ice Storm, The Visitor, and Eat, Pray, Love. And on television, he played Frank Kittredge on L.A. Law, Alan Singer on All My Children, and Father Brennan on HBO's Boardwalk Empire. Michael Cumsty, welcome to The Roundtable.
Hello, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
So you're doing this show right now, The Winslow Boy, next, Ma Chenal, both Roundabout and not your first time working with Roundabout, or times even. What do you like about working with the Roundabout Theatre Company?
Well, the Roundabout Theatre Company feels like an old-style repertory company. They don't literally do rep in that they don't have, you know, three shows in any one week that you can see that rotate, you know. But they are a company that does a certain number of shows in a season. They have a subscription audience, people who are familiar with, you know, coming to the theatre and seeing these shows. And it's an old-style way of doing theatre that I grew up in and really enjoy. It also gives you a kind of a sense of an ongoing engagement with a company, and it gives you regular employment. What's wrong with that?
Not a thing. Is it common for a working actor in either in London or in New York, although I know the systems are fairly different, to know what your next project is?
Well, I think, to be honest, it depends sort of what level you're at. If you're a very celebrated performer, the chances are that you're going to know a couple of years in advance what you're doing. For people who are more journeyman actors like myself, no, it's uncommon to know what you're going to do next. I've been very fortunate in the New York theater. I've done a lot of shows, and there have been times when I've known what the next one was going to be, but I don't think I've ever had an overlap quite like this one, where I knew halfway through one job that I was going to do my next job for the same producing organization. So this has been particularly nice.
Are you enjoying doing this Rattigan show?
I love the Rattigan show. It's a very moving piece of theater for me. It's about what it costs to stick to your principles, make sacrifices, even beyond, perhaps maybe beyond where, you know, a reasonable person would stop. And that argument is made in the play that, you know, maybe he's gone too far. But he sticks to his guns and he goes for it. It's set in the relatively innocent time of 1912. It was written in the much less innocent time of 1947 and produced in round 48. So it also has in it, implicit in it, the irony of how different the world was before the First World War, after the Second World War. So it's got a huge emotional poignancy in that regard, and it's beautifully produced, beautifully directed, and a really stellar company led by Roger Rees. It's a very satisfying project.
The director is Lindsay Posner. What is his style, his approach, and have you worked with him before?
I hadn't worked with Lindsay Posner before. He started out, or I don't know if he started out, but early in his career, he did a lot of work at the Royal Court with Max Stafford Clark. Max Stafford Clark was very much involved in new play development and was very, very text-oriented. He was a kind of director who looked to find what the play was about on the page, as opposed to bringing something and imposing it. It was sort of Max's mantra, I gather, was that everything should come from the text. And so Lindsay is very much in that tradition. He looks minutely at what is on the page and has you realize that. And in the process, obviously, you realize the whole. That sounds like the logical way of doing things. It's often not the way directors work in the theater. They have a general idea of what the play is about, and then they bring an idea from the outside and they incorporate that. And it can make for interesting theater. It's not text-driven theater. Lindsay is very much text-driven. And one of the benefits of that is that I think it, in this case, it's created a very cohesive sense of company and a real uniformity of approach. There's a kind of stylistic integrity to the production that I think is very satisfying and very successful.
The Winslow Boy, this production of The Winslow Boy, was done in London first.
It was. Lindsay did a production at the Old Vic with the same designers, the same creative collaborators, a different set of actors, very well received. But we didn't I must say, we didn't feel that we were in any way remounting something, actually. There was a very rigorous sense of, you know, discovering it together from the beginning. Very little was imposed that felt like it was coming from a previous production. And I would love to have seen that previous production, because I can't imagine it was very similar. I think our production is very distinctive in terms of the way that Roger and Charlotte, Mary Elizabeth and Alessandra and everybody else brought from their own perspective into the show, their own persona into the show, and I can't imagine that it's similar. In fact, I think it must be very different from what was in London, but that just goes to show you can have celebrated productions of the same play in two different places, and they're very different.
The character you play, Desmond Curry, he's not on stage terribly much, but he is very sweet, I think is a part of the heart of the show. Not that the show is lacking heart, and has quite a few sort of laugh lines at his expense. What do you do while you're off stage, and how do you, you know, make sure you're in character when you come on? I mean, of course, you're a professional actor, but...
Yeah, that's the short answer. The long answer is lots of tea and cookies, and no. So I'm playing this guy who used to be a professional athlete and has become a lawyer and is madly in love with the daughter of the house, Catherine Winslow, played by Charlotte, and... It's sort of an inappropriate attraction because everybody knows she doesn't love him back and he's a little bit too old for her and all that kind of stuff. But he's just mad about her in a puppyish kind of way. And then he sort of disappears. And then as the play develops, there is sort of intellectual attraction between Catherine and the main litigator, Sir Robert Morton, played by Alessandro Nivola. And that sort of intellectual attraction and the beginning of a romantic attraction is stymied by... A, their antagonism, but B, a sort of lack of feeling that exists in the lawyer, a lack of really being able to connect. And so my character, Desmond, comes back towards the end of the play and represents just a kind of open-hearted yearning for connectedness. And I love it. I love him. I love just coming in, having been sort of really a bit of a buffoon at the beginning of the play, coming back in and just putting his heart on the line.
And really having a handle. I mean, it's not like he doesn't know.
Oh, he knows. He absolutely knows. In fact, he says, I know what your feelings for me really are. And it sounds a little bit like he's about to make a fool of himself. And he's about to say, I know you've always been in love with me. You just haven't accepted it yet. But he doesn't say that. He says, I know you don't love me. I know you feel friendly towards me. Maybe a warm friendship. Maybe we can say warm, you know. But he says, I've thought about it long and hard. And this is all in the context, you understand, of the fact that she's turning 30. It's 1912. She's been jilted by her fiancé. The guy she was sort of getting interested in doesn't know how to deal, so he's left. And she's pretty much, I mean, she's had an overt conversation with her father in the play about the fact that she's going to be an old maid. And what that means, and how lonely it is, and how precarious an existence it'll be because she's not wealthy. And then this guy comes in and says, listen, I love you. I know you don't love me, but I'm prepared to take that on and marry you and look after you and adore you for the rest of our lives. And it's actually beautiful. A lady on the subway platform, two nights ago I was leaving to go back home, and there was a lady on the subway platform, and she said, Mr. Cumpsty, you're the real hero of the play. I'm like, oh, break my heart. Oh.
While you're in this show that's running, and you know what the next project is, what attention are you giving the next project?
Just this morning I was reading the play again. And I always like to get a jump on learning my lines. I didn't used to feel the need. I would just go to rehearsal and start learning my lines on the first day of rehearsal. But I played Hamlet a few years ago, and I knew going into that project that I was going to have to get it under my belt. I knew I couldn't learn it and assimilate it and produce a decent performance in 3.5 weeks. So.
He has a few lines.
And he has a lot of lines. So I learned that completely before I started, and I found it incredibly helpful. So now I often try to learn my lines before I begin. So I'm going to be working on that over the next few days. And then it's the next one we're doing is a very complex show, very, very, very complex. And the director is a woman who I found incredibly inspiring and exciting when I met her. She just explodes with energy and creativity, and every actor I knew who met with her was equally impressed. So
it's Lindsay Turner.
Lindsay Turner, this young English woman. a very hot director in London right now, apparently. I haven't seen anything she's directed, but when you read the reviews, they're just extraordinary. So I'm very excited, and I think it's going to be very much of a team effort. I think it's going to be very much about staying very tightly focused and concentrated and building something together in a relatively short period of time, which I hope is going to be kind of spectacular, theatrically kind of spectacular, yeah.
Machinal is by Sophie Treadwell. Yeah. Give us a bit of a plot summary.
Okay, well, I'm warning you, it sounds bleak. It's based on a real-life crime that was committed in the 20s. A woman called Ruth Snyder was found guilty of murdering her husband in collusion with a boyfriend, and they were both executed, and Ruth Snyder was sent to the electric chair, and somebody snuck a camera in, believe it or not. They managed, I mean, you think of those great big cameras in the 20s, but they managed to sort of miniaturize a camera in the 20s, and the guy strapped it to his ankle. And they snuck it into the execution chamber, and they took a picture, and it became a national sensation, this photograph of this woman being executed. And so the crime really kind of hit the public imagination, and it became the seed for a number of, for example, the Postman Always Rings Twice, Double Indemnity, and this play, Machinal, by Sophie Treadwell, were all grew out of the seed of this popular crime, a crime that hit the popular imagination. So it's not exactly the story of Ruth Snyder at all. It's the story of a young woman who lives with a mother. She doesn't have a lot of experience in the world. She hasn't had a lot of, you know, quote-unquote, life. She works in an office. She's described as being neither attractive nor unattractive. She's just sort of a, you know, your average sort of working girl. And her boss takes a shine to her and asks her to marry him. So she does. She knows going into it that she doesn't love him, that she's not even attracted to him. He's not an unpleasant person. I mean, he does his best to, you know, be a serviceable husband. He's just sort of lacking in imagination and doesn't really know how to connect. She becomes increasingly frustrated, and she has an affair. The affair goes pretty well for a while, but then, again, not a bad guy that she has the affair with. He warns her from the get-go that he's not going to be able to stick around for very long, and then he does, in fact, leave. She's had a baby. She finds it very hard to connect with her child because she feels so sort of oppressed in her life. And so she kills her husband in a sort of desperate attempt to escape from this sense of oppression. And then she is brought to trial and found guilty, and then she's sent to the electric chair. So like I say, not cheery.
No.
But it's regularly, this play, Machinal, is regularly on people's lists of the most important, the most seminal pieces of theater that have ever been written. It's a really spectacular play in and of itself. It's also really significant in terms of the history of the theater because it was written by this pioneering woman in the 20s and has a lot to do with not seeing this character as sort of as a criminal, but seeing her as a victim of a sort of suffocating, oppressive way of living. That, which is not to say that she isn't responsible for her actions and that justice is done, but Sophie Treadwell sees these characters with extraordinary balance and compassion. And there is nobody in the whole play who is a villain. There's nobody who is deliberately, brutally oppressive towards the central character. Everybody is trying as hard as they can to do the best, and yet the worst happens. And what I find exciting about it, and why I'm very interested in doing it, is because that seems to me very true, very human. It's sort of like when you see those moments where your heart goes, oh, please don't do that. Please don't make that mistake. Please don't miss each other in that way. Please don't let that thoughtless cruelty, you know, slide by. You think, what might have happened if that mistake hadn't been made? It's not overt cruelty. It's if that mistake hadn't been made, if that loss hadn't occurred, if that slight mishap hadn't been allowed to happen, how different things would be. I like when you watch a great tragedy like King Lear or something, you come away from it not feeling oppressed. You come away from it feeling there is so much potential for connectedness and energy and joy in the world, and we miss it by making these little mistakes. And so what I take from that is how easy it is not to make those mistakes if you're mindful. You know what I mean? If you are reminded by great works of art, by, you know, by something like this play, if we can achieve it, if you're reminded how easy it is to avoid being cruel, to avoid being thoughtless, to avoid being disconnected, then we can all live more connected, gentler, happier lives. That's the theory anyway.
I did get to see The Winslow Boy. I can't wait to see Ma Chanel, and it's been a delight speaking with you. Thank you so much.
You too, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Michael Kumsty can be seen in the Roundabout Theatre Company productions of The Winslow Boy and Ma Chanel. The Winslow Boy runs through December 1st, and Ma Chanel begins previews on December 20th. To learn more, visit wamc.org/roundtable.